Bishop Trimble, you're about to enter your sixth year as Iowa's Episcopal leader. How's that feel?
It feels great to be called Bishop of the Iowa Annual Conference and to know that I've had the privilege of serving for 5 years and entering to my 6 years the residential bishop for the Iowa Annual Conference. Even though I'm a bishop of the church, general superintendent, we're called, for the United Methodist Church, I spend the bulk of my time and my leadership here in the state of Iowa. Though I reside in Greater Des Moines, it's been my privilege and been a surprising blessing for me to travel throughout the state of Iowa in our various churches and communities and places where we're in ministry, and to experience significant diversity. While that diversity is not often in the category of racial diversity, it's been diversity in socioeconomic diversity, it's in diversity in terms of the way people approach ministry, it's been even the diversity of some of the topography and geography of Iowa and some of the culture and traditions. Hardworking people, people who are quick to help their neighbors and know how to respond to disasters. And having been here come just months after the 2008 floods and then subsequent tornadoes, and then in subsequent years some additional flooding and tornadoes, and the way in which we have responded not only to disasters or tragedies in Iowa, but the way in which we responded to our neighboring states, and whether it's the East Coast or whether it's Katrina or whether it's the southern part of the country or whether it's across the seas in Malawi or Nigeria, it's been a joy for me to be part of the United Methodist faith community in Iowa.
I'm remembering back to Grand Rapids in July of 2008 and the long days, and I have an image seared in my mind of when the results of the final ballot were announced, and I saw you put your head down into your hands. Did you envision what has happened in your life as an Episcopal leader in those early moments when your head and your hands were sort of bowed?
Well, I said, "Lord, have mercy." at that time, that's a classic photo, and it really demonstrated both the kind of conclusion of a short but exhausting process of the election of a bishop, but also the sense of humility and the sense of gratitude and almost unbelief that I was being asked to serve in such a capacity for the church. I love being a United Methodist pastor, and I still consider myself a pastor, as I'm sure you do, in an extension ministry. So when I think back on the Grand Rapids, I think about God's grace and mercy, and also one of the first persons I talked to after that was Art McClanahan, and I thought, what am I going to think about this guy? What I couldn't fit, and it turns out that it's been a great joy to work with the wonderful staff and leadership of the Iowa Annual Conference, including the communications department.
Thank you. A couple of bishops came down from the platform to where you were at your delegation table, escorted you back to the front of the room and to the community of elected bishops. What did that walk feel like?
Well, it felt surreal. I used to wonder what that meant, but it did really, it really felt almost as if, is this really happening, and I'm watching it happen. I won't go so far as to say an out of body experience, mm-hmm. although I do remember saying to Bishop Hopkins and Bishop Keaton, you know, where's my wife? Mm-hmm. And they said, don't worry, she'll be coming up to the stage too. Because that was a moment that I really felt, I know the person who was most supportive of me in ministry was in the room, mm-hmm. And I couldn't see myself making any kind of transition without her being by my side. So.
Yesterday you used a particular term to describe yourself and your status as you came to visit Iowa mm-hmm. in August of 2008, to come to Iowa for the first time. I think you described yourself at that point as a baby bishop. How long did that feeling last?
Well, it's interesting. One of the bishops, Bishop Felton May, I remember him saying, there's no such thing as baby bishops, and don't use that. Because when you're elected a bishop, in fact, that was the reality in Grand Rapids, Michigan. They kind of sweep you off to a room, and you have to sign insurance papers in case you, I guess, in case you pass overnight or something. You realize that your life is changed. You now belong, in one sense, to the whole church, and that's a kind of a daunting but a very humbling sense that you don't belong to a congregation or even to an annual conference, although you give your service in a location of an annual conference, but you belong to the whole church. And that never became more real than only a few months after I had been elected. I was invited to go to Nigeria as part of a team to deal, a conflict resolution team. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, I didn't feel like a baby bishop very long mm-hmm. because I was being asked on behalf of the whole church to go to a part of the world where we had a growing United Methodist presence, but a need for a stronger connection between the church and new United Methodists mm-hmm. in Africa.
You mentioned your wife a couple of minutes ago and how it was important for you to know where she was at the mm-hmm. time your election was announced, and to have her to be nearby mm-hmm. as you transitioned mm-hmm. emotionally, spiritually, and physically mm-hmm. into that. In addition to Mrs. Trimble, who are some of the people who have helped you grow in your episcopacy?
Well, in addition to my wife and my family, I think the people that I've worked closely with here in the Iowa Annual Conference, the ministry cabinet, certainly those who are part of the administrative cabinet here at the conference center, then bishops, particularly bishops in the North Central Jurisdiction College of Bishops, the predecessor bishop here in Iowa, Bishop Palmer, who I'd worked with before. I'd been his district superintendent, other bishops who'd been serving for a number of years, who proved to be both wise counsel and also just prayer supporters. People like Bishop Reuben Job, Wayne Clymer, and certainly Bishop Jordan, who had served here before, mm-hmm. and had been my district superintendent when I was had my first appointment while I was in seminary. So it's amazing the connections that coming to Iowa that I found that I had as time went on, and the number of people, both lay and clergy, who not only were well-wishers, but expressed a commitment to be in prayer for my leadership. Mm-hmm. So I am inclined to say if there have been good things that have happened as a result of my leadership, they're only as a result of being connected to people who were supported both by their prayers, by their counsel, and by their willing to participate in that leadership.
Hmm. Wonderful. You often invite people to be encouraged. There's that statement as we enter into our hospitality area. A young man in Nigeria in the summer of 2010 had a little blue Be Encouraged wristband on in his suit as he was at the seminary graduation of a family member. One of the things that you expressed in addition to the invitation to be encouraged was your personal mission statement back even to Grand Rapids. Remind us what that is.
That mission statement goes back well, it's now well over 20, 25 years now, and that's my mission statement is to encourage all people with the love of Jesus Christ to rise to their highest potential. And that's something that I probably at some point should do an article on just breaking that down. Notice I said the key word is encourage, but there's also emphasis on all people, not some people, not based upon their categories or their titles or their education, but all people that I come in contact with and God places me in relationship with. And I'm encouraging them not as just as a well-wisher, but I'm encouraging them out of my faith tradition and experience, and that is Jesus Christ as Christ, and to I'm encouraging not to follow me, not to sign on to a particular program, but to rise to whatever God's plan is for you. I want to be an encourager for you to rise to your highest potential that God has for you, and that has taken on almost a life of its own, and I give God the credit for that. To see that even in Nigeria, to see that when I was in at Garrett Seminary, or to see the president of the seminary wearing a wristband, he said, "You know, you remember this? I still have it. I'm encouraged." To see that at the Des Moines Airport, first time after the communications department made provisions for us to have a sign. I remember first flying here a few times and saying, "What a colleges are really welcoming me to Iowa." And I said, "But what about the faith community?" I said, "Well, what about United Methodist? We're all over the state of Iowa, and this is our largest airport. So why can't we welcome people?" And the first time I saw that the Iowa United Methodist Church welcomes you to Iowa, and it said, "Be encouraged," that brought tears to my eyes, because I think that's what we ought to be about. And we've had different iterations of that, whether it's open hearts, open minds, open doors, or whether it's be encouraged. And so I'm glad that I've stuck with it, and that people are taking it on. And we also have that as a welcome sign when you come into the conference center.
Be encouraged and to reach to their highest potential, becoming a new person in a way, with a long, solid foundation underneath. What might we do as a conference, perhaps, to reach up with greater energy, to reach up to our highest potential?
I think we can reach up to our highest potential if we really take serious the gospel mandate to put others before ourselves. I have to wrestle with that on a daily basis, Art, and I think as we begin to really pay attention to the most vulnerable of God's children in our midst, if we find ourselves in ministry with those who are often oppressed, overlooked, unlucky, lost, then I think we can reach our highest potential. We talked about radical hospitality a few years ago, but that should really be a sustaining thread through our witness here in the Iowa Annual Conference and across the globe. I was moved talking to some pastors recently about ministry in Malawi. I have not been to Malawi, but knowing now that we've got a number of people from our conference that have been to Malawi and now have a partnership with Methodists there. So I think we can really reach our potential if we pay attention to what it means to care for the neighbor, our neighbor, and not try to restrict the definition of neighbor, but really care for our neighbor as the gospel calls for us to do.
All right. One last question.
Certainly.
What can we do to encourage you in your ministry as our bishop?
Wow. I think if folks continue to extend the invitation for me to be in places of worship, I will be encouraged. If people continue to say, we're on the right track with Imagine No Malaria, whether it's making sure there's nets for every bed at JSS, or there are books in the libraries at the Banyan Theological Seminary, that encourages me. When people periodically just send me notes, little cards, whether they found out what my birthday is, or at annual conference, invariably some of the young people, the diaconos, will write a funny note and send it up. I'm always encouraged by those expressions. My mother's good at sending out cards and notes periodically, and I told her, I said, as long as you want to send me mail, I'm open to that, because I love to get mail that's not a complaint about something. So I would say I'm encouraged when I get invitations to be in community and worship with folks, and when people from unsolicited express words of affirmation, and I'm praying for you and wishing you well.